Okay.
Okay, Chevra. So what I'd like to do this evening is return to a Gemara that we began last week and kind of ran through. But there is much more to say. So let's pick up from the Gemara again. Can you see the screen share that I have?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, excellent. Zot the Gemara. Amar Abaye. Right here, we'll scroll up so you can see it. Amar Abaye, right? Toward the top, like second, third line from the top.
Okay.
Amar Abaye, Avir Shlosha Basuka Gedola, Umiato, Bein Bekanim, Bein Bishpudin, Hevi Miot. Right? Let's say I have three tefachim of Avir. Right? We already learned the halacha a number of times that airspace of three tefachim invalidates the sukkah. Right? So if I have three tefachim of avir, the entire sukkah is non-kosher. Then what I do is miato. I put something there to minimize the amount of avir that I had. Right? So I miato bein bekanim, bein bishpudim, whether I use a stick, which is kosher eschach, or I use a shpud, which is like a metal rod, in either case, heavy miyot. In either case, that reduces the amount of airspace, and thereby it makes the sukkah kosher. Okay, so I had three tefachim of airspace. That would say the sukkah is non-kosher. What I do is I mean, miyato. I minimize that space. Whether I put kanim, I put what's it called? Whether I put like reeds or I put non-kosher schach, still it is good. It koshers the sukkah. The sukkah katana, however, if I have a small sukkah, meaning a sukkah that's the minimal size, right? Again, it's at the top of the page. Besukkah katana, if I have a sukkah that's the bare minimum size, 7 tefachim by 7 tefachim, so bekanim heavy miyot, bishpudim lo heavy miyot. If it's a minimal sized sukkah, so the halacha is that if I use kanim, if I use something that would be kosher schach, so that makes the sukkah kosher. Because now I have 7 tefachim of kosher schach. I used to have 3 tefachim of airspace, but I put that one little pole, that one bamboo shoot, between those 3 tefachim. That creates a situation of lavud. That creates a situation that we connect to the airspace, and therefore it is going to be kosher, because now I have 7 tefachim of kosher schach. However, but bishpudim, if I use a metal rod to connect it, then lo hevi miyot. That is not considered a good connection because the metal rod is pasul as schach. And since the metal rod is pasul as schach, I can't make a sukkah kosher by adding a metal rod in there. Bishpudim, it's not a good miyot. However, Hani mili min hatzad. This entire conversation is when I have the 3 tefachim of airspace at the side of the sukkah. Let's say this is my wall of the sukkah, and here's my schach. If I have 3 tefachim of airspace between the wall and the schach, that's called min hatzad. That's on the side. Aval be'emtza, if it's in the middle, pligi ba rev achav revina. If the airspace is in the middle, then there's a machlokes between Rav Acha and Ravina. Chad omer yesh lavud be'emtza, v'chad omer ein lavud be'emtza. One opinion is that there is lavud in the middle. The other opinion is that there's no lavud in the middle. So here's my schach, right?
Yeah.
If there is a, well, it's hard to tell because of here. Here's my schach, the ceiling. If I have in the middle of the schach a break, right? If it is 3 tefachim, or I should say, if it's less than 3 tefachim, so there is one opinion that ain lavud be'emtza. There's one opinion that lavud only works on the side when I'm going from the wall of the sukkah to the schach. But if I'm middle of the schach, If it's be'emtza, if I'm in the middle of the stach, then there is an opinion that we do not say lavod. That is the Gemara.
Why is there
Ravach and Ravina, whether there is lavod be'emtza or not?
Why is there a difference between a big sukkah and a small sukkah as to whether using kosher stach is okay or not?
So let's just review that point. If I have a small sukkah, that means the sukkah is the minimal size of 7 tefachim by 7 tefachim. Of those 7 tefachim, I now have 3 of them which are airspace. That would be possible because airspace of 3 makes a sukkah invalid.
Mm-hmm.
Now I put something in the middle to make the sukkah kosher. If the thing that I put in the middle to minimize those 3 tefachim is itself non-kosher aschach, the thing that I put in the middle is a metal beam, which is pasul aschach, so it's inconceivable that I could make a sukkah kosher by adding a pasul something. That just doesn't work. So that's why by a small sukkah, only if I put a kosher aschach to separate the two parts of that 3 tefachim of airspace. Only if it's kosher aschach, then I can say the sukkah is okay. Because what I just did is I created more kosher aschach. But if it is pasul aschach on the minimal size sukkah, that can't help. That's what the Gemara says. If it's a large sukkah, the sukkah is more than 7 tefachim by 7 tefachim. So even if I have a metal rod there, that the sukkah could still be okay. Someone looks bothered. It seems that the president of the Washington Heights congregation.
Yeah, I'm still bothered also.
Is the implication that you need a minimum of 7 tefachim of completely kosher schach for a sukkah? Is that the idea?
So, not exactly, because we know that schach pasul is going to be okay, right? Also, you can have some pasul. But the
if I have a sukkah that had the minimum size sukkah, right, it was fully covered over, and I had one metal beam in there, in the kosher schach.
If I have a minimal size sukkah and there's one metal beam, that means it's not a kosher sukkah because I don't have 7 tefachim of kosher schach.
Right. So that's the exact equivalent over here. That's the idea.
Correct.
Right. With this slightly larger than 3 tefach gap, once I put the metal beam in there, okay, lavud works. But I have a metal beam in there that makes it less than 7 tefachim. Is that the conceptual framework?
Yes, that's the conceptual framework. There is a slight conceptual question as to whether, because I have the metal beam, we're saying now I have 3 tefachim of pasul schach, or whether I don't have 3 tefachim of pasul schach, I just have one little metal beam. Right? The question as to how lavud works, which I want to talk about a little bit if I'm in a good mood tonight, is does lavud fill in the space with that same material? So if I put a metal beam, does that mean that I just filled up that space with metal and therefore it's as if I have 3 tefachim of metal? Or I say, no, lavud just connects the schach, right? So I have a little bit of schach here, a little bit of schach there, but there's one metal beam which invalidates the sukkah. Either way, it doesn't matter. Because either way, the sukkah is non-kosher because I need 7 tefachim of kosher stuff. Excellent. Ellie, are you saying something or? Oh, okay. Now I just saw your screen go yellow, which is the international Zoom sign of attempting to say something on the call. Okay, let's go weiter, Chevra. So the Gemara tells me that there's a machlokas between Rav Ach and Ravina, whether I say lavur be'emtza, whether this principle that anything less than 3 tefachim is considered connected, does that principle apply only on the side of the sukkah or even in middle of the sukkah? Since it's machlokes Rav Ach and Ravina, we have a principle throughout Shas that whenever Rav Ach and Ravina disagree, we paskin l'hakel. We are mekel l'halacha. So therefore, Shulchan Aruch and Siman Tafresh Lamed Beis, Se'if Beis, tells me that we pass in Yesh Lavud Be'emsa, there is Lavud in the middle. We'll come back to the psak in the Shulchan Aruch in a few minutes, but it's just good to know. So let's go on in the Gemara.
Can you just tell me what lavud means?
A lavud is a halacha l'moshe misinai that any gap of less than 3 tfachim halachically is not a gap.
Okay.
Right? That is the rule of lavud.
Okay.
We know that we say lavud on the side of the sukkah between the wall right. and the schach. The question is, in middle of the schach, do I say lavud? That itself is a dispute. Rav Achan Ravina, but we pass in that it's good. Now, Zakvi Gemara. My time of demand to Omar Yesh Lavud Be'emtza. Right? It's like 3 lines from the top. Well, or now it's 1 line from the top. What's the reason for the opinion that there is Lavud in the schach? Ditanya. The Braisa says, Kora hayotza mikoso zeh ve'ena noga'as mikoso acher. If you have a Kora that goes from one wall and it doesn't touch the other wall, or b'chein shtei koros, achas yotza mikoto zeh, v'achas yotza mikoto acher, v'einon nogos zu b'zu. If you have two beams, that one comes from this wall, one comes from that wall, and they do not touch each other, pachos mishlosha ein tzach lavi kora acheres, shlosha tzach lahavi kora acheres. If the two beams are within 3 tzvachim, you don't have to bring a new beam, but if there are more than 3 tzvachim between them, then you have to bring a new beam. That's what it says. Now let's just review a little bit of what a kora is. Basically, if you have a chatzer is a courtyard, meaning it is shared space that a number of homes use. I remember when I spent a summer in Kishinev. Now it's around 30 years ago already, like I'm such an old man. But I spent a summer in Moldova, and we all had like apartments. I don't know if you could even call them apartments. We all had like holes in the wall around like a shared space in the middle. And there are walls. 3 sides are walls, right? 1, 2, 3. 3, and there are homes in the middle. And on the 4th side, there's an opening. That's a standard courtyard. So the halacha is that in order to be makel on carrying in that courtyard, there's an iser d'rabbanon that I'm not allowed to carry in any shared space. So what you need is to put up either a lechi. A lechi is a vertical, right? One post this way, or a kura, which is a horizontal post that way. That's the halacha.
Does it have to be touching the other side of the courtyard?
So here's the thing. So the Gemara tells me that if I have a kora that goes from one wall to the other wall and it doesn't touch, it's okay as long as it's within 3 tfachim.
Okay.
Similarly, if I have 2 koras, one from wall A, one from wall B, and they don't touch, if it's within 3 tfachim, it's okay. Now, the kora is the functional equivalent of a ceiling because it is on top, not on the side. Says the Gemara that the opinion that there is lavud be'emtza is based on the fact that we see by the kora that lavud helps. If I have this post, this beam, that goes from one wall to the other wall, if it's less than 3 tfachim, ein tzach lahavi kora acheret, you don't have to bring another beam because that's good enough. So therefore, one opinion says that's fine. That teaches me, that there is lavud be'emtza. V'idach. But the other opinion says, shani koros dirabonon. Kora is different because it is a din dirabonon. The entire halacha of the prohibition to carry in a shared space is because midrabbanan, it somehow is like Rishus HaRabim. The Din D'Oraisa says I'm not allowed to carry in the public area. Now, a public area, we could technically assume means that it's area that's owned by everyone. This is actually another legal question for the lawyers among us. What does it mean to be public space? Does that mean that it's owned by no one, does that mean it's owned by everyone? Chazal assume that public space means it's owned by everyone. Based on that, Shlomo, based on that, let's say it's a takon of Shlomo HaMelech, which is very early, that any space that has many people who can access it and use it, you're not allowed to carry in that space unless you make a certain takana, unless you put up a korah or the like. This entire din is derabbanan. The Gemara says, you know what? Since the din is derabbanan, that's why I will say that there is lavud be'emtza. That's why I will allow lavud on the top. But maybe with respect to a sukkah, which is a din de'oraisa, maybe we cannot say lavud be'emtza. That's the way the Gemara rejects the potential source from the korah, the potential source from the beam. The Gemara goes on. My time of demand to Omar ain't lavud be'emtza. The other opinion, the opinion that says that we don't say lavud in the middle, what's his reason? So his reason is based on the Mishnah in Ahalos, Ditnan. Right, Ahalos is everyone's, what, second favorite Masechta right after Uktan, right? So the Tnan.
Tvo Yom, come on.
Which one?
Tvo Yom gets no love over here.
Tvo Yom is also quite up there. It happens that Ahalos and Kilayim, in addition to being difficult, are also very long. There are some other Masechtos that are very difficult, like so Tvo Yom and Uktin are very difficult. Kinem, right? It's very difficult, but it's not so long. Our winner's circle, you have to both be difficult and long. So that maybe Ahalos is one of the big winners.
We did one that was short, the shortest one, but it was very difficult.
Uktin, that's it.
No. It was the one that we did right before this one.
Oh, Harios. Yeah, yes. Harios was... I mean, Harios is correct. Yeah, that was fun. Harios is a lot of fun, though. Okay, so the Mishnah in Ahalos tells me, Aruba Shebabayis, if I have a skylight in a house, Uba Poseach Tefach, and there is an opening of one Tefach in the skylight. Let's say a Tefach is what? 3.5 inches. I have a 3.5 inch opening in the skylight. So Tuma Babayis, Kulo Tame. Masha Keneged Aruba, Tahar, right? The halacha of Ohel is that if you have a corpse in a home, or not even a corpse, if I have an etzem kisaora, I have a bone of a human, of a dead human, that's the size of a barley. It's very small. If you look, next time you make a challenge, you look at how large one barley is, it's really very small. So etzem kisaora of a corpse brings tuma to the entire room. If there is a skylight in the room, so the entire room, the skylight is a tefach by a tefach, the tuma spreads to the entire room, but since there's a skylight there, the tuma does not shoot up through that skylight. So if you're on top of that skylight, you're going to be okay. Right? Aruba shebabayis, bapul se'a tefach, tuma babayis kulo tame, the whole house is tame, masha keneged aruba, but the area opposite the aruba is tahar. Tuma keneged aruba, let's say you have the tuma right by the skylight. You have your barley of body, right? Right by the skylight. Tuma kenegar aruba, kohabai is kulo tahar. Then the entire house is tahar. Because if the corpse is right by the skylight, so the corpse just shoots right up. The tumor goes right up and it doesn't spread to the entire house. But this is providing that skylight is a tefach. Ein ba'aruba posea tefach. If the aruba, if the skylight is not a tefach, tumor b'bayis k'neged aruba tahar. Tumor k'neged aruba kol abayis kulo tahar. Okay, it's the same halacha. Tosis points out the bottom, Rashi points out in the bottom of the page over here. There's no difference in the two cases. It's just, for whatever the reason, the Mishnah in Ahalos separates the cases. But basically, if you have a corpse that is underneath this room, So the tuma spreads throughout the entire room. But the tuma doesn't go up through the skylight. If the corpse is right under the skylight, then the entire room is not tummy. Now, this skylight is the size of a tefach, or smaller than a tefach. We see that we do not say lavud. We see that we do not apply the principle that anything smaller than three tefachim is considered connected. Because were we to say that principle, so then the entire halacha of skylights wouldn't matter. Now, I should qualify this a teeny bit. The Ritva over here has a suggestion that maybe for halachos of tum'ah, we don't use the measurement of three tefachim, we use the measurement of one tefach. But it doesn't matter. The point is that I see from this case of the skylight that we do not connect the two parts. So that is the evidence from Shas that there is no lavud be'emtza. That's the evidence from Shas that there is no lavud on the ceiling. The idach, the one who disagrees, would say, Shaini hilchos tuma dehachi gemiri lahu. Halachos of tuma are different because this is the halacha l'moshe misinai. Tuma has different rules than everywhere else. By tuma, the rule is that there is no lavud be'emtza, that there's no lavud on the ceiling. But everywhere else in halacha, maybe there is lavud in the ceiling. That's what the Gemara says. Now, the comparison to tuma itself is very difficult. We're assuming, as a matter of halacha, and the Ran says this very clearly, we'll talk about this a little bit more, that the only conversation we're having over here relates to lavud be'emtza, which means lavud on the ceiling. Everybody holds that there is lavud on the walls. The Gemara tells us on Daf Hey that there's a halacha l'meishim yisinai of lavud and good and dofen akuma. Those are halachos of the mechitzah of a sukkah. Everybody holds that by mechitzas of a sukkah, we say lavud. Now, by tum'ah, we do not say lavud. No? By tum'ah, let's say there is a dead body on one side of the, let's say you have a dead body on one side of the house. And there is a hole between this side and that side. If that hole is the size of one tefach, the tumah goes from one room to another room. Poseach tefach is meveyas hatumah. One tefach brings tumah from one room to the other room. So here's the problem, right? The Pnei Yehoshua already asks this kasha. He says, obviously, the din of tumah is different than the din of sukkah. Because by sukkah, everyone says that I apply the rule of lavud with the mechitzos, with the wall. The only question is I apply lavud on the ceiling. That means if I have a wall and there's a hole less than three tefachim, we seal it up. But by tumah, the halacha is that if there is a hole of one tefach, the tumah goes through and through. That tells me that I don't seal it up. It goes from one room to another room. No? Actually, when I was the rabbi of Mount Sinai, so like the first year I'm rabbi, we had this following issue. There used to be a funeral home in the Heights called Hirsch & Sons. It was actually in the Bronx, right over the Washington Bridge. Some of you remember the Hirsch & Sons funeral home? So Hirsch & Sons went out of business. And when Hirsch & Sons goes out of business, so Rabbi Katzenstein, Zichrono Levracha of Breuers, comes to me with Leon Gerstel, with the Chevra of KAJ, and they want to have a conversation about where they should have levayas in the Heights. because Hirsch and Sons is out of business. First, they tried to go to Ortiz Funeral Home down on Broadway and like 189th, something like that. And they realized this is not a place that would work for them. So there was a suggestion that came up. They didn't even discuss it with Rav Mantle. They came to me to ask, maybe they could do levayas in the social hall of Mount Sinai. That was the question. So one of the issues that came up was, well, if you do a levaya in the social hall of Mount Sinai, let's say there's a mace, there's a nifter in the social hall. So the tumah is going to go throughout the entire building. Breuer's kids use the gym. Like, I could get all the kaihanim out of the building, but they're going to be kids in the gym, let's say. Some of those kids in the gym are going to be kohanim. What are we going to do? The tumah is going to go from the social hall all the way down the steps, right, into the gym. You have to block it off. Right? There is a little hole. Even if I close the door, there's a door between, there's a few stairs and there's a large staircase to go up from the lower level up to the upper level, Mount Sinai. So even if I close the door, there still is a crack. That crack altogether combines to be a tefach of airspace. According to many mefarshim, when you have it combined to be a tefach, it's going to be a problem. So the Shiloh was, can we have levayas? So I suggested that maybe we could have levayas, and whenever we have a funeral, we'll just put some tape to close up that entire area to make sure that the tumah doesn't go through and through, that you have to close the entire thing, that you don't even have a tefach of space. Rav Mantle said that he would not okay this. After the Chevra brought this idea back to Rav Mantle, he said it's a pirtza waiting to happen, which I think is absolutely correct. In other words, if you're assuming that you're going to run the levaya based on the fact that we're going to close up and we'll tape up the door space, whatever, it's a little too dangerous. I'm telling that story just because the halacha is that tumah goes from room to room as long as you have a tefach of space between the rooms. So the Pnei Yeshua is bothered by the kasha. How can our Gemara possibly bring a raya from tumah to sukkah? By sukkah, everybody holds that we say lavud on the wall, but by tumah, there's no lavud on the wall. If you have an opening of a tefach, the tumah goes through and through. So the Pnei Yehoshua says an unbelievable idea. He says, you know what? There's a Shachin Yerideya, which is mamish a collector's item. The Shachin Simin Shin Ayin Beis of Yerideya Paskins, that many cases of Ohel, there are three cases of Ohel in Shas. There's Ohel in the sense of if the dead body's on top of me. There's Ohel in the sense of I'm on top of the dead body. If I bend over a corpse, that's Ohel. If the corpse flies on top of me, that's ohel. Then there's another type of ohel, which is called ohel hamshacha, which is that me and the corpse are in the same room. Most assume that ohel hamshacha is d'oraisa, but the Shach has a line where he says maybe ohel hamshacha is d'rabbanan, meaning if I'm in the same room as the corpse, maybe that's only tamei mid'rabbanan. Maybe the din of tumah min hatar is if I'm on top of the corpse or the corpse is on top of me. Now, that's very hard to understand. Why Ohel Hamshacha be Drabonon? But some of the Achronim, including the Pnei Yehoshua over here in Sukkah Daf Yud Ches, say that maybe what the Shach means is that this din of Tumah going through a door or going through a hole, maybe that din is Drabonon. Because maybe Min HaTorah, I'll say Lavud even by Tumah. Midrabonon, I don't say Lavud. So what, right? So that answers our kasha. We're bothered by a kasha. How can our Gemara potentially bring a proof from tumah to sukkah, right? Our whole discussion is about whether there's lavud be'emtza, whether there's lavud in the ceiling. But in the wall, for sure there is lavud by sukkah. By tumah, we know there's no lavud on the wall, right? The proof is that the tumah goes through and through. If you have a hole, the tumah goes right through. It makes people tumah, like the downstairs in Mount Sinai, whatever. The whole thing becomes tumah. So the answer that the Shach gives, the answer that the Pnei Yeshua says is that no, maybe that whole din of the Tumah going through the hole, going through that door, whatever, that's a din derabbanan perhaps. Maybe min ha-Torah, so long as there is lavud, maybe the Tumah will not go through on the level of Doraisa. That's his suggestion. And if that's the case, on the level of Doraisa, we have an apt comparison between Sukkah and Tumah. So far, so good, Chevra? Okay. Let's talk a little bit more about this. Let's read the Tosis. Ein lavud be'emza. Tosis comments, Ein lavud be'emza means hainu l'mala, that means on top, didefanos machshirin la'el kona kona pachos migimel. Right? This halacha is, the question in the Gemara is only about the ceiling. The walls, we pass in that there is lavud. Umikoros mavoi parach shapir, dahainu nami lamaila. Right? The Gemara brings the proof or a question from the kora by a mavoi, from that beam. That's also on top. Uparach. And our question is, Bein Lamanda Omar, in the first pack of Aaron, Kora Mishum Hekera, Bein Lamanda Omar, Kora Mishum Mechitza. Nonetheless, it has to connect. And the Shaila is whether I say Lavud. That is an interesting point, because we could have said that the din of Lavud is only a din in Mechitzos. And maybe it would not apply, according to the opinion in Erevin, that Kora, that post is just a reminder not to carry. It doesn't have the halachic status of mechitza, but nonetheless, Tosis is saying that even according to the opinion that Korah is heker, still the rule of lavud applies. We could discuss this further, but let's leave it. Vim timer. Tosis asks Akasha first, the last wide line in the Tosis. Vim tomer. Im ein lavud be'emtza, im kein, tzilosem rubem e'chamasa tipasa, agshetahe, mechusa yafo, me'uba, kimin bayish, shalo yehebo nekev. Frek taisvis! If there's no rule of lavud on the schach, so that basically means that every single sukkah in Judaism is possible. Because if you don't say lavud, right, that means any tiny opening is going to be a problem, right? So you're only going to have a kosher sukkah if you have so much schach that there's mamish, no opening at all. But that's highly unlikely. That Tosis is kasha. If ein lavud be'emtza, so even if the sukkah is more shade than sun, im kein silasim u'mechamosa tipasel, it should be puzzle. Akshadei mechusa yafe, u'me'uba kimin bayis, unless it's very thick, like a house. Shelo yehei ba'nekev, that there should not be any hole in it. No hole at all. So Tosis answers, Lav Pirchahi. The Hocha Mayrik Sha'avir Mahalech Apnei Kula. The only question is when the airspace goes through and through, right? Coast to coast. That's the only time when there's a question about Lavud Be'emtza. If you have any break in the middle, if it doesn't go coast to coast opening, then there's no question of whether there's lavud be'emtza or not. Again, as a matter of halacha, we paskin yesh lavud be'emtza. But Tosis is saying that even that authority who tells me ain lavud be'emtza, that's true only when it is avir al pnei kulo. That's true only when the airspace is coast to coast. That's what Tosis says.
So according to that shita, we have a problem with our old-fashioned bamboo poles, because you would have gaps from one end to the other.
According to that shita, the old-fashioned bamboo poles would be a problem, absolutely, because that would be avia apne kulo. Even the way we pass him with the old-fashioned bamboo poles, you just have to make sure that you don't have three tfachim between them. But it would be a problem, according to the opinion, that ein lafud be'emtza. Because, yeah, that would be avir al pnei kulo. We paskin avir al pnei kulo is a problem only if it's three tfachim of avir. But the opinion of ein lavud be'emtza would say that even less than three tfachim of avir, it would be a problem. Now, this, of course, creates a little bit of an issue. Because even for us, that the that there is only a problem if you have three tefachim of space. That means that the entire sukkah only becomes invalid if you have three tefachim of airspace going coast to coast. But if I have one tefach, let's say, of airspace that goes coast to coast, it says in Shulchan Aruch, I'm not allowed to sleep under that airspace. Now, this, of course, raises a question. Is that true? That would mean that if, let's say, I have a sukkah that is, I don't know, you buy a sukkah, it's 12 feet long. The sukkah is 12 feet long. And I have a couple of inches of schach right over here, right at the beginning point. And then I have 11 feet of airspace straight across, but it's 11 feet and 1 inch wide. So technically speaking, the simple reading of Shulchan Aruch would be that you're allowed to sleep under it. You're only not allowed to sleep under the avir if the avir goes coast to coast, right? Again, if it's avir less than three tefachim, it's kosher, but I can't sleep under it, right? That's the halacha. And that halacha is true only, right, that I cannot sleep under it if it is coast to coast. That would be a little absurd, because that would mean if I could have 11 feet of airspace, 1 inch wide, right, I could sleep under it because I have a tiny drop of schach at one side. So Shlomo Zalman Auerbach isn't sure about this. He says maybe the halacha is that I view every seven tefachim unit separately. Because since seven tefachim is the minimal size of a sukkah, maybe I view every unit of seven tefachim separately, and maybe you need a break of schach going the other direction, right? Warp and woof. Maybe you need a little bit of warp, right? Not warp speed. Maybe you need a little bit of warp just to make it that you're able to sleep underneath the sukkah, then underneath that airspace. That might be true. And that's why some of the posts can recommend, by the way, the case that Ilan mentioned, when you have bamboo posts, some of the posts can recommend that you should put a few pieces of bamboo the opposite direction. You shouldn't put all your bamboo woof. You should also put a little bit of warp, because in that way, you're able to sleep underneath it, etc. Okay, those are some of the halachos. Now, Rav Moshe Feinstein, in one of his tshuvos, is very bothered by this idea. Basically, what we're saying is that airspace less than three tefachim does not invalidate the sukkah. Nonetheless, you should not sleep underneath it. Well, what the heck, right? If it doesn't invalidate the sukkah, that means that we treat it like it is silasam ruba mechamosa. Regular rules of sukkah. If that's the case, so I should be able to sleep underneath it. How come you can't? So Rav Moshe has a suggestion, which is really interesting. Rav Moshe suggests that maybe there's two dinim in schach. There's the halacha that schach has to be a mechitza. And there's another halacha that has to be silasa ruba mechamosa. When I say that I apply lavud be'emta, that even in the schach I say lavud, if you remember, we pointed out from the Ran that the Ran suggested that the reason why there might not be lavud be'emta is because maybe lavud is a halacha l'moshim yisina in the walls of a sukkah, not in the roof, not in the schach. But the halacha is I say lavud be'emta, and that's probably because I treat schach like it is a mechitza. Who says the mechitza of the sukkah is only 1, 2, 3, 4? It's only the sides. Maybe the ceiling is also a mechitza, no? That's what probably emerges, that the ceiling is also a mechitza. If you remember, the Gemara in Daf, hey, right, was learning the source of Tent Fachem, La'olam o'yarda shechina, we learn from the paroches and the aron, etc. You get an impression that the schach is also some sort of mechitza. So the din is, says Rav Moshe, that I say lavud be'emtza, and the avir less than three tefachim does not invalidate the mechitza status of the schach. But there's another din of the schach, which is this schach kosher to sit in? That's a different din. You need two things. You have to be a mechitza status, and you also have to be the type of thing that you could sit in, which means that you are sitting underneath the shade. It could be that that tiny drop of airspace, since there is no shade over there, so you're right. We view the entire sukkah like it's more shade than airspace. I could sit anywhere else, but that one pinpoint location that is underneath the airspace, maybe I can't sit there. Shulchan Aruch used the expression sleep there, but means sit also, the Mishnah Berurah says. Maybe I can't sit there, sleep there, because I am not underneath the shade of a sukkah. Effectively, what we're saying is that sukkah has a din of mechitza, and there's a din of shade. That's what seems to emerge from this conversation. Now, of course, the Aruch Lener is bothered by a question. Once our Gemara is saying, according to Taisus, our Gemara is only addressing the question of Lavud Be'emtza when you have coast-to-coast airspace. If that's the case, so then the whole comparison to Tuma is not apt. Because the case of Tuma is Aruba, is you have a skylight. The skylight isn't coast-to-coast. No? If your skylight is coast-to-coast, we don't call that a skylight. We call that a crack in your ceiling. Right? That's not a skylight. So the whole Gemara is very hard to understand. And the Aruch Lener has an essay where he tries to suggest that maybe there are two different types of lavud. There's lavud that we fill in space, lavud kisatum, and then there is lavud that is michaber, lavud that attaches things. Perhaps by tum'ah, the issue is that I need lavud kisatum. I need to seal it in. And the question that our Gemara is asking is also whether it's lavud kisatum. By tuma, there are different dinim, that satum versus not satum doesn't have to depend on whether it's coast to coast or not. This is a whole lengthy discussion that the Aruch Lener puts together. But for our purposes, I think the question that he raises is really a serious question. Meaning, how can we compare the skylight and tum'ah to the case of the ceiling, the schach, etc., if by the schach we're saying it's only a problem if it goes coast to coast, and by the tum'ah it certainly is not going coast to coast? The question is an excellent question. Whether the answer is good or not, I don't know. It's hard. The answer is going to be hard to explain. Honestly, I don't fully understand the Aruch Lener's answer. But I'd rather just leave the question than present an answer which I don't fully grasp. So far, so good? Okay, let's go on in our study of Talmud. We're going to scroll down. Right? The guy says, Shiny Hilchos Tuma, the Hachi Gemiri Lahu. The halachos of Tuma are different because that's halacha Mishum Sinai. Darash Rabbi Yehuda Bar Eloi. Hey, Rabbi Yehuda Bar Eloi gave a drasha. It's different than the type of drushas that rabbis give in the year 2021. This is a drasha he gives, right? Bayis shenifchas v'sikeich. By the way, what does drasha mean? So in Tanoim, drasha means that you are deriving stuff from psukim. You take a pasuk and you, like in the Mishnah of Doresh, Arami Oved Avi, Adsof Kar Parasha, by the Haggadah, drasha means you take every word in the pasuk and you make it significant lahalacha. In common parlance, drasha means you make a speech. And I think in Amoraim, the word drasha also meant you make a speech, for sure. The issue over here is I have a Tana, Rabbi Yehuda Bar Eloi. And Rabbi Yehuda Bar Eloi is using the word drasha not in the sense of deriving stuff from psukim. He's using drasha in the more contemporary sense. Okay, Darash Rabbi Yehuda Bar Eloi. Bayis shenifchas asikei chagab of kshera. If you have a home, and there's a hole in the ceiling of your house, and you put tzchach on top of that hole, it's kosher as a sukkah. Amlafan Rebbe Yishmael, Rebbe Yossi, Rebbe, Parish, right? Rebbe, you have to explain more. Right? Rebbe Yehuda, Rebbe Loi gets up, he makes a speech. He says, you have a home, and the ceiling cracks, and you put tzchach in the ceiling, it's okay. So Rabbi Yishmael says, hey, Rabbi, you didn't say enough. Parish, you have to explain more. Kach Pirish Abba. This is what my father, Rabbi Yossi, said. Arba Amos Psula, Pachos Me Arba Amos Kshera. It's the same halacha that we learned many times. If the ceiling is less than 4 Amos from the wall, if you have less than 4 Amos of ceiling, so then the schach that I fill in is going to be okay. Based on our rule of Dofen Akuma, the rule of crooked walls. More than 4 Amos is not okay. So basically what Rabbi Yishmael, Rabbi Yossi is saying is, listen, Rabbi Yehuda ben Eloi, you're saying that when you put tzchach on the crack in the ceiling, on the miraculously developed skylight, if you put tzchach there, it's going to be okay? Well, that's not so simple, because it depends whether you have 4 Amos and the rule of Dofen Akuma or not. Then, based on this same episode, that Rabbi Yehuda Rebbe Loi makes a speech, and the students ask, Rebbe, you should explain more, the Gemara goes on to some other things. Darish Rabbi Yehuda Rebbe Loi, Abruma Sharia. Rabbi Yehuda Rebbe Loi made another speech. She said, Abruma. Rashi comments, second wide line from the bottom, Abruma is a tiny little fish. Ve'ein shrutzim nikarin bahem. You don't see any bugs inside that fish. Abruma sharia. I'm going to find Rabbi Yishmael, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Parish. Rabbi Yishmael, Rabbi Yossi says, hey, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Loi, you have to explain more. Kacha ma'arba shomakom ploni asura. You have to say that the fish in this place is usur, the fish in that place is mutter. The basic idea over here is like this. The concern is with the fish, like Rashi says, that there might be some bugs in the fish, that the bugs are not noticeable. A not noticeable bug is still usur, as long as it could be noticed. Abruma was permitted only because the abruma is coming from a place where we know that there are no bugs. Oftentimes fish swallow bugs. No? Is this true? You could cut open a fish and you'll see little bugs inside it. So it could be that it's going to be non-kosher. Again, there are different rules about whether the bug swam into the fish or not. There are various halachas, but that's the issue over here about the abruma. And what the Gemara says, the abruma in some places is mutter, in other places is Usur. Ki ha de Amar Abaya. Just like Abaya made the following statement, Sachanta de Be Nahara Sharia. Sachanta apparently is a type of fish. Rashi in Avodah Zarah Daf Lamed Tes says Sachanta is a type of fish called chilek. We'll talk about that in a minute. Sachanta that comes from Bav Nahara, that comes from this area, from that river Bab, the Bab River, is permitted. My time. Why is the tzachant of the river Bab permitted? Ilema mishum deredifi maya. If you're going to tell me it's permitted, because the water in the river Bab goes very quickly, it's redifa maya. V'hai da'aktame kemen delesle chut hashidra lo matze ka'im. And maybe a tray fish, since it doesn't have a backbone, it cannot last. It won't survive. The Gemara is assuming that one of the signs of a kosher fish, as opposed to a tray fish, is a backbone. No? There are spineless fish and fish with spines. Every fish without a spine is treif, a jellyfish, right? Fish without spines are treif. So if you're going to tell me that the fish in the river Bab, right, since the water goes very quickly, so a dag tame that doesn't have a spine can't survive. But frektima hakachazinan dekoi. We see with our own eyes that spineless fish survive in water that goes very quickly. Ella, maybe it's a different reason. Mishum demalichi maya. Maybe it's because the river Bab has salty water.
How does this have anything to do with sukkah? With what we were
Absolutely nothing to do with sukkah. It's only here because this is another episode that Rabbi Yehuda Rebbe Eloi makes a speech, and Rabbi Yishmael Rebbe Yossi says, Rebbe, you have to elaborate more. So we had another similar episode about the fish.
Okay, and also when we learned the Avodah Zarah, didn't we say that even fish that have fins and scales and have a backbone, if the scales kick come off easy, that it's not kosher?
So I'm going to talk about some of the details of fish in a few minutes.
Okay.
If we have time, let's just try to make progress. So the Gemara says that maybe the reason why it's no good is because it doesn't have a backbone, right? And fish without backbones won't survive in this. And maybe the reason why you know it's good in the river Bab is because a tray fish doesn't have a backbone, and fish without backbones can't survive in the flowing water. The Gemara says that's not true. The Gemara says, oh, maybe the reason is because it's salty water. You should demlichi maya, but high dog time, it came to, let's say, kilfi, lo matzikai. A tray fish that doesn't have scales can't survive in salty water. So the Gemara says that's also not true. We see that tray fish survive in salty water, even though they don't have scales. Ella, the reason is mishum dilo marbatinaihu dag tame. The dirt of the river Bab does not produce any dag tame. This area, the river Bab, we know for sure there's no dag tames there. Amirivina ha'ina deshvichi nahar etan v'nahar gam delahasa masira. Bizman has said that we know in their times, right, that the Nahar Eitan, the Eitan River and the Gamda River flow into the Bab River, so therefore it's going to be Osir. Basically, what the Gemara is saying is that if you have fish that grow in an area where you know for sure there's no tray fish, it's going to be okay. This is relevant for a number of halachas. If you know that there's an area and there's no tray fish, it's going to be okay. But that's not the issue that I want to talk about in this Gemara. I want to talk about the Gemara is talking about a certain fish called sachanta. The word sachanta means in biblical Hebrew, in the book of Yechezkel, sachanto means its stench, its smelliness, its stinkiness. Says the Rashash over here, it seems to me that this sachanta might be the famous fish called the stinkus. The famous fish called the stinkus. Now, what's the story of the stinkus? The story is that the Tosfos Yontiv, the Yontiv Lipman Heller, has a story that he tells us in his commentary on the Rosh Maseches Chulin, that one time someone brought a fish to him called the stinkus marinus. And it created, right? Marinus means fish. Stinkus means it smelled bad, apparently. By the way, I don't understand why you mean that there's like one fish called stinkus. Every fish smells bad, according to me, but that's a different story. So they bring this fish called the stinkus marinus, and he has a shayla on it. You see, the Gemara tells me in Chulin that there are two, the psukim tell me that there are two simanim of a dag, tahar, fins and scales. But the Gemara says that any fish that has scales also has fins. Any fish that has scales has fins. So they bring the stinkus marinus to the Tosfos Yontiv, and he looks at the stinkus marinus, and there are scales on it. So it would seem that it's kosher. On the other hand, it doesn't look anything like a normal fish. It has four legs. It doesn't have fins. Well, the Gemara says that anything that has scales has fins. So he's questioning, do the legs count as fins? Apparently, it's like some sort of aquatic creature that's not like a full-fledged fish. That was the stinkus marinus. And the poskim have a whole back and forth. Some suggest that maybe it's not a pure fish. It was something that was created by breeding a fish after Matan Torah. Maybe when the Gemara says that every fish that has scales automatically has fins. That's talking about before they started interbreeding. But after they interbred, so then it will. Then you could have a creature that has scales but does not have fins because part of its DNA is tray fish. Rashi tells us in Parshas Noach that the fish were not destroyed in the Mabel because all the other creatures interbred with other animals, but fish remains true to the cause and they wouldn't interbreed. Maybe later times after Parshas Noach, perhaps they interbreeded. That's what the Tosfos Yontiv suggests over there. It's a very interesting question about the Stinkus Marinus. Most poskim assume that a Stinkus Marinus is non-kosher because if it has legs, it's not a dog. The halacha is that fins and scales are signs of kashrus if something is a fish. What's a fish? I'm not exactly sure what it means to look like a fish. Some of the poskim say, by the way, that there's a type of fish that's like a rounded type of fish. That maybe rounded fish aren't fish. Maybe to be a fish, it has to be more straight and narrow. Some poskim say that to be a fish, maybe you need a tail that has like a V mark inside it. It could be that the din of fins and scales is only when something has tsuris hadag. Only if it's a fish beforehand, then there is a discussion of the fins and scales. Rav Schechter likes to talk about when he went to South Africa, and there's a huge fight in the rabbinate in South Africa about a particular fish, the turbot or something, that they talk about whether it's kosher or not. Some rabbinim say it's okay, some say it's not okay. That's exactly the question. It doesn't have like the tail with the V in it. The Stinkus Marinus was non-kosher because it doesn't look like a fish, even though it has scales, like it's still going to be non-kosher. There is a whole discussion I have over here in the Sefaria website, the curious case of the Stinkus Marinus. So they quote in, this is the episode in the Tosfos Yontiv, Madana Yontiv, that's a Sefer Anchulin. Ani biyosi av bezdin in Wien, in Vienna, they bring me the Chacham Aharon Rofe, a dog hanikra boshonam Stinkus Marinus. You see that? And it is found in the Spanish Sea. And it's Sam Hamoves. Apparently it's a poisonous fish. And there's a way of getting the aras, the, I don't know, the venom out of the fish. And you can do refuah with it. And I'm not sure, is it kosher? Is it non-kosher? What's the story of the Stinkus Marinus? And he writes, maybe this minzeh, work of Achar Kabbalah's Chazal. Maybe it was a mixed breed after Chazal. That's what the Tosfos Yontiv suggests.
But don't we say that hybrids are no good anyway?
No, not necessarily. We're not allowed to make a hybrid, but a hybrid could be kosher if it comes from two kosher fish. So there's a whole discussion, two kosher animals, two kosher fruits, whatever it is. There's a whole discussion about the Stinkus Marinus. There's like a million sources. And then Rabbi Usher Weiss felt that the Stinkus Marinus is a sandfish. A sandfish is interesting in that a sandfish isn't really a fish. It doesn't swim in water. It goes in sand. And Rabbi Datan Natan Slifkin in Zutora.blogspot, whatever, about the secret of the Stinkus. So he writes, it turns out there's even a simpler solution to the problem of Stinkus. I love the name Stinkus, right? Tzachanta, that's how he got into it. The Rashash says that Tzachanta is probably the Stinkus because it comes from Lashon smelling bad. There's a simpler solution. The Stinkus Marinus, which I'm watching in its vivarium as I type these words. Not only is it not a fish, it is not an aquatic creature at all. Instead, it's a lizard from the skink family, known as the Skinkus Skinkus. Whatever. He assumes it is a skink. My daughter Chava Geula knows a lot about fish and stuff. So she was convinced based on the description when I was preparing this for Shir and Avodah Zarah like 9 years ago on Mount Sinai. So she knew a lot about fish. I asked her. So she thinks that it's a mud skipper. That's what she felt. What's his name? Dr. Slifkin assumes that it's a skink and the sandfish, the skink, does motions like swimming, but it's not in water at all. B'kitzur masa, whatever it is, it's not in kosher. Instead of Yitzhak Hashem, next week, maybe I'll make two other comments about the about this Gemara with the fish, the skink, the stinkus, whatever you want to call it. Any questions or comments or observations? If you want, you could keep on reading. The sandfish truly deserves its name, etc. It's really a cute thing. Okay. Any other questions, comments, observations, jokes? Okay. Chevra, so have a good evening. Thank you for coming to learn. And in Yirtzeh Hashem, next week I'll want to make another comment about this fish sugya. Okay, Hatzlacha.
Thank you.